Everybody, this is Clock 2, and you're listening to the New World Order, episode 34 of season 13. I'm still on the move. I'm not in Raleigh anymore, but neither am I in New Zealand. I'm in San Diego, California, for the Open Source Summit, and just got started today. It's a Monday. I would have recorded this episode that you're listening to earlier, but I've been really busy, actually. I've been at work most of the previous week. I've been flying yesterday. So that just didn't work out for me so well. So apologies for the day lateness once again. But the beautiful thing about podcasts is that give this a week and no one will know that it was a day late if I hadn't said so. So in this episode, I still don't have my Slackware computer in front of me, so I still don't feel like we should go through, for instance, Udo Linux until I'm back on Slackware. Not because, you know, there's not really a great reason for not doing it. I just feel like if it was any other package, I would go through it anyway. But since we've started Udo Linux on Slackware, I want to continue with that version, that specific version. Because I'm afraid that if I just look up Udo Linux on my Fedora box, which I actually did, sort of trying to decide what I was going to do, it's still right here in Less, actually. And I see that there's a bunch of stuff in user bin, and then there's more stuff in user s bin. And I can't be sure that they've organized it the same way that Slackware did, and I feel a little bit, hesitant to just kind of change horses midstream. So I'm not going to do that. And instead, I'm going to talk about Auto Tools. I'm going to talk about Auto Tools because I've been using it recently. And I'm quite fond of it. I will admit there's a couple of quirky things about the syntax of like the macros and things like that that one does kind of have to consider. But I think it's arguably worth it, and I'll tell you why it's arguably worth it. Very notably, it's worth it because you can write 20... say maybe 30 lines of code to get everything installed, and you'll get out of that 20 to 30 lines of your code, of your little macro lines, you'll get 4,000 lines of code for free. Now that doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing, right? I mean, yay, free lines, big deal. That doesn't necessarily mean that those lines are worth anything. Just saying, look, you've increased the line count of your install program by thousandfold. That's not necessarily great. Or actually, would it be 1,000? It would be definitely at least 1,000. But anyway, I don't know what fold means. So it's a lot though, right? And sometimes that just means, oh, yeah, you've bloated the thing. But what happens with Auto Tools is that it actually does generate code that considers the platform. And that's pretty valuable. Speaking as someone who has written install scripts from scratch, just thinking, well, how can I get this program onto Linux BSD and OS X, or whatever they're calling it these days? How could I do that? And sort of figuring that out and writing it into a shell script. It works. Is it the best way to do it? Possibly. It's an okay way to do it. But AutoTools does it all for free. I'm not saying that there's not a good alternative, because there probably is, and I don't know where that is, but I mean, there's probably something out there that is simpler, has less macros for you to worry about, and so on. But then again, AutoTools has a lot of great macros. And these macros help you generate an application that will run on the platform that you're targeting and then install into same places that can then also be overridden by the user. So it's really preparing you for all eventualities. And I think that's the selling point of GNU AutoTools. So, GNU AutoTools is the thing You've probably seen it or heard about it before if you're into building your own software from source code. If that's something that you're interested in, then you've done the thing. You've done this. You've done the .configure, make install. If you've ever typed that sequence into a terminal, then you have used GNU AutoTools. GNU AutoTools is the infrastructure that makes those commands work. And those include automake, autoconf, technically autoreconf, and make itself. Now, make isn't the only make around. There are other makes. But GNU make, GNU automake, and GNU autoconf, and autoreconf, that's all part of the AutoTools suite. And it performs those canonical steps of preparing an application to be compiled. That would be the .configure step. During that step, AutoTools scans the host system, the thing that you're running this stuff on, to discover your default settings, such as where your support libraries are located. So on Fedora, that would be foo-devel, D-E-V-E-L. On Ubuntu, I think they just do foo-dev, or maybe dev-foo, something like that. And then on Slackware, you just get it for free because you install everything on Slackware. When you install an application, you get all the header files and everything. So .configure would detect where those support libraries are, those header files and such, where those are located. And it would detect where you want, where your system says the default location should be for the actual install. So that gets set there during that .configure step. It looks at variables, important variables like your binary path and your executable path and library path and things like that. Documentation, where did your documentation go? Where's that going to go? And it builds these paths based on these variables that exist. And these variables are defined generally by your distribution itself. Someone spent time sort of defining how the system is going to be put together, and those variables get set, and then when .configure gets run, it looks at those variables and respects them. And you can override them yourself, which is one of the nice things that you get with AutoTools. A bunch of variables that you can override, because if for some reason you know better than your system, which is not an amazing thing, that could quite possibly happen, then maybe you want something installed in user local bin instead of user bin. Or maybe you want it installed /opt/bin, and so on. So you can define all those different variables. You can make them be whatever works best for you. Or you can install locally. You could say, well, I got a different destination entirely. I don't want you to install everything to the root partition. I want you to install everything to this folder here, which I'm going to then bundle up and send somewhere else or whatever. So that's the .configure step. And then make is the step that triggers the make file. It looks at the make file and does all the instructions contained in the make file. And that usually involves compiling code with some kind of C compiler, which itself is usually defined by a variable, a CC variable. And then finally, you've got the make install, which again triggers, it's a rule in the make file called install. So you're invoking the install step with the make program. And as long as there's an install rule in the make file, then everything that you've compiled gets placed onto your system in whatever location has been detected by .configure. That's how AutoTools works. The big picture, because obviously we don't yet know, we don't understand what .configure is doing. We could suspect that it was a script of some sort because we're running it with a .slash. So we assume that it's some kind of script, but where does it come from? How does it get generated? Well, that's what we'll talk about. So the reasons that you would want to use auto tools would include the portability angle, which I've just sort of talked about, the ability to deliver software and have the user do their ./configure and their make and their make install. That's really nice. Another angle that I've learned recently is that it is the default build system in a way for a lot of the packaging out there. So for instance, if you're going to build an RPM out of a package, out of a software, if that software is already scripted and set up for the auto tools toolchain, then all you have to do to build an RPM out of it is sort of include like two or three macros that comply to the auto tools workflow, and your RPM build system is, it's done. That's all it takes. It's not exactly all it takes. It's not quite that easy. You have to still have to build your spec file. You have to make a sort of a skeleton spec file, and you have to list all the files in the RPM and little things like that. I mean, there's weird sort of what I would consider clunky RPM maintenance that you have to do. But the thought process, the hard part of like trying to figure out, okay, well, how do I make this file get over to my temporary directory, and then from my temporary directory into my RPM, like what needs to happen there? It doesn't matter. You just tell it, oh yeah, this is an auto tools thing, so do your make install steps here, and there you've got an RPM. So, and I'm pretty sure I haven't done it in a while, but deb is kind of the same thing for deb file, and frankly, even Slack builds could leverage that. So in other words, the new auto tools, as Dan Washko himself once said, that's kind of, I mean, he didn't exactly say this, but that's kind of the universal packaging format. I mean, technically, he said, okay, compiling from source code is the universal packaging format. And I think that's a broader statement than what I'm saying, but I guess I'm taking a subset of what he said and saying that it's kind of nice. It sort of universalizes a lot of the packages out there. So if you know that you're going to distribute something to people who are then going to package it up, handing them an auto tools infrastructure makes it pretty easy for them to sort of plug and play into that. And that's worth thinking about. Because otherwise, and again, just from experience, you've got this shell script that you've written to install on three different systems and you feel pretty good about it, but you forgot that there are some things that some people might want to override, but oh well, no one's really complained, so that's okay. And then you deliver that to a packaging, someone who's going to package it up, and they're going to redo it anyway because none of what you've done applies to their packaging system. So they're now re-scripting, you know, they have to script something completely new. So now you've got two build scripts, one that you do for your fallback, one that you do for your official, and then one that they do for their official, and then the next person is going to do the script, the packaging is going to do another one, and it just keeps compiling and compounding, and that's just kind of silly when you could say, okay, well, here's your new auto tools, it will compile everything and make sure that it gets to the right place for an install. You make that talk to your packaging format, and in the end, we will all have the same kind of package based off of the same source. Okay, so auto tools, speaking of being universal, auto tools has a pretty specific set of expectations in how you structure your project. So first of all, it assumes that the source code that you're packaging that you're delivering is in a source code directory called a subdirectory called, so in a directory we'll call that foo, right? That's our project is foo. So in foo we would have a subdirectory called src, source src, and that's where GNU Auto Tools expects the source to be located. It doesn't have to be in src, but I'm just telling you that if it is, you get a lot of stuff that you don't have to specify. You don't have to override the defaults. Default is your project directory slash src. That's where AutoTools is going to look for the source code. You also must have four files, one called news, one called readme, one called authors, and one called changelog. Let me make that very clear. It has to be news, readme, not readme.md, not readme.txt, but readme, authors, and changelog. Three of those are capital. Changelog is not. Change and then the log, C and L are capital in changelog. And AutoTools is pretty strict about that. If it doesn't see those files, it will throw, I think, a warning. But I almost want to say it's an error. Either way, it won't be happy if you don't have all those files. Now, you don't have to use those files. They can be symlinks to something larger. Like if you have your authors and your readme and your news, such as it is, in readme.md, then you can just symlink all of those to readme.md. The new AutoTools doesn't care. It just wants to see that those entities exist. Okay, so the first thing that you have to do, and the confusing thing, I guess, about AutoTools, or maybe not confusing, but the thing that you want to remember is that the new AutoTools becomes part of your source. And then you build from your source a distributable source package. So what I'm saying is that you set up AutoTools for development. And when you're done developing for that sprint or whatever, and you want to release something to, let's say, packagers, or to the general public, whatever, you want to release something, then you don't just release what was in your development folder. You don't just take whatever you had and put it online. You do like a new AutoTools build for your distribution. So make dist, for instance. And that produces sort of this thing with the configure script and your make file and all these other important parts in a folder. That's why you may have gone to a Git repository at some point, or a SourceForge repository, I guess is what they're still called. You may have downloaded something from the latest, from master. You download that, and maybe you've done a .configure, only to find, surprise, surprise, there is no .configure, and maybe you'll get an error that says, or maybe you'll read in the README, it says, if you didn't download a dist package, a release file, then you'll have to set up AutoTools first, and it might tell you to run the auto reconf and stuff like that. So the first step is for you to build your development files for your AutoTools infrastructure. And then eventually you'll build from that what you actually hand out. So the first file you have to create is called configure.ac, and that is located in your project's root directory. So it's not in SRC, it's out in your main project file. And it is going to be used by AutoConf to create the configure shell script that runs before you build the code. So this is the thing that's going to generate the configure script that people run when they type in .configure. So the file has to contain, at the very least, the ac_init macro and the ac_output macros. These are M4 macros, which is described on the GNU website. If you go to gnu.org/auto-conf/manual, you'll find, just gnu.org/software/auto-conf, really. You'll find details about the M4 macros, the macro set. Macros are commands that are kind of bundled together. Macros, they take a bunch of activities and sort of give you, they're basically functions, really, in a programming language. You know, they're things that are bundled together that you can invoke so that you don't have to do a whole bunch of extra work. And these two, the AC emit and the AC output, are pretty simple. I mean, they're designed to be simple. So the AC emit is the one that provides, and I mean, this alone, to be honest, was kind of one of those things that kind of sold me on this tool set. The AC init, parentheses, square bracket, example, close square bracket, comma, square bracket, 2019.8.20, square bracket, comma, square bracket, Plateau at GNUworld, info dot, or whatever this show is called, GNUworldOrder.info, close square bracket, slope, close parentheses. So if you haven't gathered, with one line of code, you've just made it so that you can manage the versioning of your software in one place. You've given it the name of your software, which I just said is example. I know earlier it was foo, but I guess we renamed it. So example, and then 2019.8.20 is today's date, according to my computer, which I don't think that's actually right. I think I've got my computer, well, I know I still have my computer on New Zealand time, so I think here in the States it is August 21. But anyway, so I'm using that as a version string. I know that's not quite the best way to do it, but that's what we're doing right now. So if I was going to increment that tomorrow, then I would 2019.8.21, and then when I build my distributable auto tools package, all the version strings in my code would know that that its current version is whatever's in those square brackets. So that's huge. That's a big deal. And then AC underscore output is gonna generate a config.status, which performs various configuration actions. You can read more about it in the documentation on GNU.org. Mostly you can just kind of trust that that's going to help you with your ./configure step. And that's pretty much it for configure.ac, except that you need a little bit more than just configure, the ./configure. You're also going to need a makefile. So a makefile is the thing that tells make what to do. So when they do the ./configure, they're running this configure script, which you just created with the AC macro set. But then you need the, when they type make, you need to have stuff for make to do. It needs a makefile. And that makefile is going to need to sort of govern what make knows to do. And actually, I lied. That's not it for configure. I forgot there's a couple of extra things for configure, so actually we're not done. But anyway, the makefile macro is am_init_automake. That's pretty easy. That doesn't accept any arguments, so you just type that into your little configure.ac script that we're building here, and that will ensure that when you do autoconf that a makefile is generated. And then there's ac_config_files, parentheses, square bracket, makefile, close square bracket, close parentheses. And finally, possibly, you'll need to define some kind of compiler. And strictly speaking, this is not necessary. For instance, if your auto tools, if this package is called example, if we didn't have anything to compile, then we wouldn't need to define a compiler, because a compiler would never need to be called. But if you have written code, then you need to define either CC for a C compiler, or CXX for a C++ compiler. And the full macro for that is either AC_prog_CC or AC_prog_CXX. then you're actually done. So that's the configure.ac file. You're not done with everything, you're just done with the configure.ac file. Next is the auto tools makefile generator, which is makefile.an. This is used by the auto make command, which if you'll recall, I listed as one of the three components of auto tools. There's auto make, auto conf, and make itself. So makefile.an is the thing that AutoMake is going to use to generate a full, fleshed out, big old make file for AutoTools, makefile. And once again, makefile.am is kind of a collection of, I'm not going to say macros, because it's not, they're not macros exactly, they're like, the word is on the tip of my tongue. They're almost overrides. They're not quite overrides. They're just explicit things that you want the makefile to be sure that the makefile includes. They are rules, I guess. They're not quite rules. There's something else. There's another term I'm trying to stammer out, and I just can't get there. But they are rules for your makefile. So what you write here is going to end up after a fashion in your makefile, and then you can actually write stuff directly that will end up in your makefile. So it's kind of your gateway to adding to the stock template that your makefile is going to end up as. So first of all, what you'll need almost always are a few variables to define which files are needing to be built and where they are going to be installed. What would govern their location? So you can create your own variables, and in this interesting kind of syntax, the end of the variable name defines kind of how they get used later. So variables ending in underscore programs, all capitals, are the things that identify, their variables identifying code that needs to be built. It is usually considered the primary target. It's the sort of the main reason that the makefile exists. There are other underscore variables, like underscore scripts. Those are, I think the intent is that those are additional scripts that, for whatever reason, you want to include with your distribution of your code. Now, for me, sometimes they were the scripts were everything, because I was just doing a auto tool package of something that was only a bash script. So underscore scripts was like all it was, because it didn't need to be compiled, it just needed to be included. So underscore scripts was good enough. Underscore data, that's obviously some data files. Underscore libraries are library files, and so on. So if your application is being compiled, then you use the identifier bin underscore programs equals example. And then you might say example underscore sources equals example.cpp if example is a C++ program. So there's a certain madness to the variable structure. There's a certain compounding, I guess, of what you're building. So bin underscore programs equals example, and then now we know that bin underscore programs is example. Therefore, example underscore sources specifically provides the source of what? Of example. And it's telling AutoTools that the source for example is example.cpp. Now notice that we're not saying it's src/example.cpp. That's because AutoTools assumes that your source files are in the src directory. So remember when I said earlier that you didn't have to put everything in src? It's better if you do, because then at this point, when you're having to define, for instance, source files, you don't have to tell it exactly where everything is each time. And there would also be a different rule anyway that you would have to tell it to allow files that are outside of the default path, so that you're avoiding a lot of extra work that way. Okay, so the target of bin underscore programs is to be installed into the bin dir. And the bin dir is a thing that dot slash configure sets up. And that's why when you're doing a dot slash configure, you can change your binary directory. You can tell it, I'll put it in user local bin instead of user bin or whatever. Because all of these things are looking like at this cascade of variables and these cascades of paths that are being built. And you're kind of taking part in that as you build this makefile with all these specially defined variables. So for instance, let's say that you weren't doing a C++ application. For example, didn't need to be compiled. Well, in that case, you could do bin underscore scripts equals bin slash example, for instance, or wherever your example is. And now bin underscore scripts would know that you want to install this extra thing that doesn't need to be compiled, but it's still a valid part of your setup. Now, if you actually did have your example script in bin instead of src, then you do have to add automake underscore options equals foreign space subdir dash objects. And that tells AutoTools that it's okay that you've just defined that the example script is in bin instead of just throwing an example, and it would know that, oh, that must be in the src directory. So it really depends on how you're generating your scripts and so on. I don't know that if I was writing a script, I would think to put it in the src directory, which is why I'm pretending like it's in bin. Either way, though, the destination would be your bin dir, and so you would still call it bin underscore scripts equals example, or bin slash example, wherever that thing is. Because you want AutoTools to know that this is the stand-in for the binary. This is the bin underscore entity. It happens to be a script, so don't compile it, but it's still a thing. You can also make, as I said, your own custom makefile rules in makefile.an, and they'll be copied verbatim into your generated makefile. So while you're sitting around making variables and stuff that will get propagated throughout your makefile, you can also just type stuff into makefile.an that will get translated completely over to your distributable package. So for instance, if you did if you had to change something in your example script, you could do like an example colon bin slash example dot sh. And then do a sed line under that or something, or whatever you wanted to do, or if you needed to touch a certain file that wasn't there yet. Or, even more realistically, or more generically, I guess, you could do like a clean rule. So for instance, sometimes, for me especially, I want to have a completely clean state, right? Pretend like everything is brand new. I like being able to get back to sort of the state where nothing has been generated yet. So I put a clean-local colon into my makefile.an, and I do like an at rn config.status, configure, config.log, do an at rn makefile, at rn dash r auto make dot cache, and so on. All these, you know, sort of litter files that get sprinkled around. I mean, I could just add those to my get ignore too, you know, I could do that. But I don't. I make a clean dash local. And then when you do a make clean, it brings those, it includes those those rules straight from the makefile.am because they got trans or they got dumped into the makefile. It's part of your makefile now. Okay, so that's kind of your makefile process. That's your automake.am or your makefile.am rather, and your configure.ac scripts. And to decide what you need to do, it's really a matter of reading the gnu.org/software/autoconf and automake documentation. It does tell you what different macros do and what needs to happen for them to get invoked and kind of what the process is for you to end up with something that sort of makes sense. I kind of feel like in a way it's a little bit easier than, let's say, an RPM, because at least with makefile, you are, the variable construction's a little bit weird, like bin_programs, and that you set that to example, or to foo, or whatever, and then somehow foo becomes your new base, or your example becomes your new baseline for your next variable, so you do that, sources or whatever, you know, I feel like that's a bit weird, but at least you know, sort of in your head, you know what you need to get done, you know how the thing is compiled, and so you know the steps, the one or two steps to actually make everything sort of get built, so all those GCC lines or those G++ lines or whatever that you have to do to test your application, you know that those things are, you know, that's your source, those are your sources, and you know to list them in your makefile.am. Whereas for, I don't know, RPM or something, there's just a bunch of macros that you kind of throw at it, and you hope that it's going to interact with your project correctly. Now, to be fair, if you've done your project in AutoTools, you can almost guarantee that RPM will interact with it correctly. So that's the benefit. So I think, yeah, in a weird way, at least for me, AutoTools is the first step in making, let's say, an RPM or a .deb. No, really, like that's the secret first step that no one tells you about because you probably don't have control over it. It's whoever programmed the thing that you are packaging. But as a first step, it does tend to make more sense. That's not to say that you'll know exactly, you know, right away. It's not super intuitive. I mean, you'll still have to look up the macros. You'll still have to look up the variable construction, like what it all means and where things are going to get installed to. But, I don't know, it feels a little bit more intuitive than not to me. So, once you're done all of this stuff, you have your development infrastructure, and you can continue to develop your application. And at some point, you probably want to get it out into the world. So you think, okay, well, I'll just drop this, I'll just tar this up and put it online, right? Well, no, wrong, not yet. What you want to do is you want to make a dist target. Now, you don't know that you have a dist target because you haven't done that yourself. AutoTools just gives it to you for free. So, once again, this is kind of part of the workflow, and it does take a little bit of getting used to because you don't know that it's part of the workflow. But you'll see. So, the first thing that you do as the developer is auto-reconf --install. That installs the compile script, the install that -sh script, and something called missing. I don't know what that is, to be honest. But apparently it has something to do with some fancy things like getconf and a compile script and make and something for make. A bunch of different things gets installed locally to your little folder. And then you can do, and your configure script and your makefile gets created. And then you can just do a make dist. That's all you have to do. Make dist. Like I say, dist happened for you out of your makefile.am file. It read all of the stuff that it knows it needs in order to make that work. And it puts all of those things into a directory. So you might do like a the make dist and wait for a moment, and then you'll get an example dash 2019.8.20.tar.gzen ready to go. And you could even extract that if you wanted to and go into it and then do your .configure make install as a test, and you would see that it worked. So that's what your users are going to see. So your users never see the thing that we've built together just now. I mean, they do see it because they could run those commands themselves, but they don't have to. What they get is this configure make install infrastructure that you've created with the make dist. The advantage being that it's really easy for them, no matter what system they're using, to build your project. And as projects get more complex, and as you realize that you can't anticipate all of the different requirements of a bunch of different systems that you never imagined even existed, much less that someone with one would try to install your software on it, AutoTools makes that possible for you. Because now you don't know, you don't have to know where this system or that system happens to keep its header files. Or the fact that the system keeps its header files some in one place, but the user building your software on some slice of their supercomputer at work happens to keep all those header files over here in their home directory because they're not accessed to the big supercomputer header files. So, you know, everything's getting redefined in ways that you would never expect. But AutoTools doesn't care because it has that cascade of variables and environment variables and settings that no one has to think about except the user, and they know to think about it, and AutoTools will accept that. So I would say that AutoTools is kind of brilliant. And I know that there are other build tools out there. I realize that. I know that AutoTools is not new. It is not necessarily the best thing, but it is not a bad thing. It is actually really quite useful. And spending a little time with it might surprise you. Really, it's not a bad thing. And I think this is a great one for me to cover today because when we cover these commands in Slackware as part of the package overview, I don't see how I could possibly explain them in context to one another. So this is the big AutoTools tutorial that none of these commands will, you know, they don't really make sense outside of sort of that flow, and that's how that workflow is meant to happen. So hopefully that was informative. Certainly if you've always, you know, if you've never set it up, you might wonder how all that stuff happens and how it gets to where it, to you know, how that configure script, where does that come from, and why does the make file have all that stuff in it, and what does it all mean when you go look at it, because it is overwhelming. It's 4,000 lines of code or something like that, so there's no way that you're going to make any sense of it. And the reason for that is because nobody made sense of it. The people maintaining AutoTools made sense of it, and everyone else is just using the macros to generate this thing for their package, for their code. And you can too now. Okay, I think that's everything I've got. I'm scheduled to give a talk tomorrow at Open Source Summit, so I guess I'll go prepare for that. Not prepare, but, you know, practice. And until then, I will be practicing. Until next time, I'll talk to you from New Zealand.